You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is Dr. Kathy Callahan. Kathy Callahan, Ph.D., an ARE author and speaker, is the author of Living in the Spirit, Applying Spiritual Truth in Daily Life, and Multisensory Human. She is presenting a workshop entitled Universal Laws, God's Handbook for Living Life to the Fullest, on October 20th, 2012, in Charlottesville, Virginia, and workshops on Living in the Spirit and Universal Truths at the ARE Houston Center on November 3rd, 2012, and at the ARE Annual New Year's Eve Conference to be held December 29th to the 31st, 2012, in Virginia Beach. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Well, you're welcome, Art.
How did you become involved with the work of Edgar Cayce?
That began a very long time ago. I think it was the summer of probably 1967 or 68. My mother brought home a book, Edgar Cayce on Atlantis. And I was in my teens at the time, and I kind of laughed at her saying, why didn't you buy this kind of a book? You know. But she had it around the house, and finally, after quite some weeks, I picked it up and I read it, and I couldn't put it down, because what I found in that book was the answer to a lot of questions that I had, questions on life, you know, why are we here, what's our purpose on earth, that type of thing. And I continued to read. I saved my money, and every week, and I, you know, bought another book, and eventually, over the years, I branched out from the Edgar Cayce readings to other metaphysical teachings, particularly unity teachings, and that's kind of the story. So I've been studying the readings for over 40 years now.
You'll be presenting a workshop titled Universal Laws, God's Handbook for Living Life to the Fullest, on October 20th in Charlottesville, Virginia. Can you tell us a little bit about what participants will experience?
Yes, that workshop is actually based primarily on a book by Bruce MacArthur. It's called The Universal Laws, Why Your Life is the Way It Is and What You Can Do About It. And a secondary book for that is my own book called Living in the Spirit. But what the workshop focuses on are the various types of universal laws, laws of cause and effect, laws of transformation, laws of love, and laws of self that Bruce MacArthur basically pulled out of the readings. There's no one reading, you know, where these are all put together in one place. It took him a lot of research over the years to pull that together. But he came up with a schematic of all the universal laws that have been talked about in the readings. And basically, universal laws help a person. They're there whether you believe in them or not. They work all the time, just like the law of gravity, and they apply everywhere to everyone. But once you learn what these laws are, you can start to use them to your advantage for positive transformation in your life. So workshop participants will basically learn what these laws are, how they work, and how they can actually work with them. Because when you work with the universal laws, you work in alignment with divine order, okay, with the divine order of the universal mind or God or creative spirit or whatever you may call that. So it's hopefully a workshop that they can walk away taking a little bit of knowledge about some things that they can, you know, maybe do differently. Relationships is one area that we discuss, because it seems everyone has some difficulty in some kind of relationship. But by using the universal laws, you can make those relationships more positive.
Well, now, you mentioned the laws of transformation. Could you tell us something about what that is?
The laws of transformation, to put it briefly, the most powerful, I guess there's a number of laws here, and to go into them with, you know, take an afternoon, I think.
Okay.
Basically, what I would say for laws of transformation, tied in with the laws of cause and effect, and there are things that people are familiar with but don't always think of them as laws. For example, you know, as you sow, so you reap. What you do to others comes back to you. Attitude of expectancy in terms of what you expect, you get in return. And these all work together. And when you apply them, I almost would say as a package to a situation or a condition or relationship, and when you learn to bring love and understanding to it, you will find different results than you would without applying these laws.
Will your talk in the ARE Houston Center on November 3rd cover the universal laws as well?
No, that's a different topic. That topic is called Living in the Spirit, Making a Difference Day by Day. And basically what that is it's based on the premise that the ordinary moments of everyday life are our opportunities to make a choice, and to make a choice as to whether we're going to bring something better to the world, you know, not make a difference at all, or do something that, you know, could be a hindrance to ourselves or others. But when we think of making a difference, we tend to think in terms of the grandiose, I think, headline grabbers, you know, saving someone from a burning building, or, you know, world earth-shaking events. And what the Edgar Cayce readings tell us, as well as what the great teachers throughout history have told us, is that every person can make a difference. And in fact, there's one reading, and I'll paraphrase it because I probably can't quote it directly, but it basically says that with even a kind word or a smile, you can make a difference in the whole of world affairs. And that's basically the message of that particular workshop, that we can find the opportunities in our daily life to, you know, say the kind word, to smile at someone. And it not only it changes our life, first of all, but it will also change others. And when we continue to do this, we do make a difference. We raise not only our consciousness, but we raise the consciousness, I think, of others around us. And in essence, we raise the consciousness of this planet itself.
Well, I guess maybe part of that, taking the time to say a kind word, or, you know, show someone a smile, or just something that might seem small to help them, part of that might be not requiring that to be returned.
Exactly, exactly. You do this freely without a thought of getting anything back. You do it simply because it's the right thing to do.
Well, you're also an author. Could you tell us about your latest book, The Path of the Medicine Wheel, A Guide to the Sacred Circle?
Yes. I drew upon my background in anthropology. My PhD is in anthropology. And I wrote that book as a synthesis of various Native American traditions. The medicine wheel teachings are teachings that our guidelines, I guess you would say, in terms of the way you can live your life. They provide us with information in terms of a holistic look at ourselves, our relationships with others, our relationship with the world. It's based on nature teachings. For example, everyone is born with a natal spirit animal, according to these teachings. And it is a animal, totem animal, so to speak, that is with you from the time you are born all throughout your life. But based on what we are doing in our lives and where we are on the wheel, when you begin a new project, for example, you might find yourself in the East, and you can learn from the teachings of the East, the area of the rising sun, new beginnings associated with springtime and moving forward into new ventures. You may find yourself, you know, you may have a spirit animal with you, such as the eagle, okay, who represents the East. But basically, there my book contains some exercises, some meditations. I would call them guided meditations that one can do themselves, One, to help you determine where you are in terms of the wheel, northeast, south, and west. You're beginning a new venture. If you're ending something, you would probably find yourself in the west. The north is the time of contemplation. If you're in the middle of harvesting the, you know, the fruits of your labors of a long project, you would find yourself in the south. But it helps you identify where you're at, and then also to identify what spirit animals may be with you at this time. And there is also a portion of the medicine wheel that deals with the moon under which you were born, sort of a Native American astrology. And depending on, you know, what month and day you were, you have a particular animal, a spirit animal associated with that as well. And just like traditional, Greco-Roman astrology, can give you some insight into perhaps yourself.
We'll be right back with more with Kathy Callahan, PhD. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Dr. Kathy Callahan.
Cayce readings are very clear that there is not any one tool such as, you know, the medicine wheel or the tarot or astrology, that they're tools along the way. They're not the answer, but they can help you as you're seeking to broaden your knowledge about yourself, I think, and about yourself in this world.
You're relating yourself to these four directions spiritually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting. This is sort of unrelated, but I was listening to a program, and being that you are an anthropologist, I thought it might be interesting, you know, from an anthropology standpoint, how some cultures, when they're describing where something is placed, they'll describe it as the northeast corner, as certain directions, whereas, you know, some cultures might describe it as to the left or to the right, basing where something is on their own location. And so it seems perhaps by relating to these directions, you're putting what's around you first. You know, you're saying, I'm in the north, rather than saying, this is right in front of me or to my left. You know, it's north of me. You're finding a connection to the earth.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Hmm. And the four directions, the sacred four directions, are, you know, figure very prominently in the teachings and the mythology and in the very thought patterns of Native Americans. And I am married to a Native American. I've lived on a reservation for a number of years. And I can tell you they do look at the world, you know, in terms of their own culture, just as we look at the world in terms of our own culture. You know, whereas I would say, yes, it's to my left or to my right. They would say it's to the north or the south, has different meanings to us.
The idea of the medicine wheel, is this common to a large number of tribes, or where did you derive this?
The medicine wheel primarily were with Plains Indians and Prairie Indians. I say Indians, Native Americans. And I call it a synthesis because it's not representative of any one particular tribe. I mean, I took a little bit of the Cherokee, the Ojibwa, the Sioux. And I call myself a synthesizer, and because my background is in research, and I will research different traditions, whether I'm writing on Native American traditions or something totally different. But I research different points of view, let's say. I try to find the commonalities between them, and then I bring those commonalities together, and that's what I write about.
You were a naval officer for 30 years. How did you balance your own spiritual beliefs with your professional life?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. I've gotten that in workshops where people will get up and they'll say, how can you possibly, you know all this spiritually and yet you're in the military? And I kind of chuckle because I live in Northern Virginia now, have for quite some years. And one of my ARE Search for God study groups here. When I look at the members, there was myself. Okay, we had two people who worked for the FBI. We had two people who worked for the CIA. We had another one who worked for the IRS, and one person who was retired. But you find spiritually minded people everywhere and anywhere. At least that's been my experience. And some of the most spiritually minded people I've ever met have been in the military. You know, it's no different than any other organization. The Navy is no different than any other organization in terms of the people that come into it and make it up. They may have a little different focus or, sometimes it's a family tradition. Sometimes it's a patriotism type of motivation for coming in. I went in for 4 years and a paycheck because, even though my father, was in the Navy, during World War II in Korea, but it was not something I ever thought I would go into, especially as an anthropologist. But, it took me a lot of years to realize that I was exactly where I was supposed to be. Of course, I do believe in reincarnation. And, after about 12 years in the Navy, and with me always saying if I only weren't in the Navy, I could do all these wonderful things and lecture and write books, I came to realize that I was working out a lot of karma in the Navy. Certainly was not in my conscious path or planning for my life this time around. But it was, I believe, something I knew before I was born that is where I needed to be. And hopefully, over the last 30 years, because I just retired 1 July of this year, 2012, over 30 years, I hope I have worked out that karma. I've had a few lives I'm aware of where I was military, and I didn't use my, I abused my power, okay? And I didn't treat people very well. So this time around, I hope I did it right. That's what I keep saying. I think I did it right this time.
I was a chaplain assistant in the Army, and sometimes it's hard for me to understand, what other people in the military were going through spiritually, because they would expect for me to talk about spiritual things. But it's interesting to see. So from your standpoint, what was your job in the Navy?
What was my job? I've had a lot of different jobs.
Oh, yes.
When I came in 1982, women were not allowed on ships, on combat.
Wow.
So, and it wasn't until President Clinton back in 92 changed that, and actually a couple years before, ships were actually fitted to accommodate women. I was far too senior in my career to go to sea, basically. So I never had that opportunity. I don't regret it. I probably would have found it very interesting. But I specialized in the area of the Navy, the active duty people who train and supervise reservists, who mobilize reservists.
Oh, yes.
Of course, we had the Gulf War in 91. And, reservists since 9/11 have been continuously mobilized. So it's been a very busy time. Been very blessed to have 3 commands of my own, shore commands over the years. And, I've written a lot of policy actually and some law. So, it's been interesting, but it's the people that make it interesting.
You'll be in Virginia Beach for the annual New Year's conference, December 29th to the 31st, 2012. What can you tell us about that presentation?
That will also be on the topic of living in the spirit. It's the same topic as in Houston. And I know they are at that conference wanting to present a very positive, very hopeful view of the future. And what I'm going to be targeting my talk on is towards that thought that we can, as I said earlier, we can make a difference. And I could repeat what I said earlier about the Houston conference, but I don't know if you...
Oh, no, that's okay.
...repeat it. But it's along those lines. I might focus a little bit more on what I think is happening to the human race. Again, from my anthropology background and training, which was in, I guess, my master's was actually in human evolution. And, I think we're developing into a multi-sensory being, beyond the 5 senses. I believe we've already developed the 6th sense, which I call imagination. And that happened, several, actually probably more like close to 500,000 years ago. It was what allowed us to discover fire and enabled language, and later helped us develop such things as the arts, you know, literature, and even science. So I think we're already beyond the five physical senses. We have a sixth sense of imagination, and we can see into the mental realm of thoughts with that ability. But I think we're developing our seventh sense now, and that I call that a spiritual sense. It allows us to see into the world of spirit and see beyond thoughts and ideas, but actually to spirit energy itself. And when we do that, we are able to see beyond surface differences and understand that despite, you know, where we were born or, you know, what the color of our skin may be, all those differences that human history is just rife with, you know, wars and genocide and all the horrors of history we have because of surface differences. We see beyond that and understand that we're really spiritual beings and all created, you know, as co-creators and heirs with God. So I'll probably focus a little bit more on that and won't touch too much upon that during the Houston talk. But given the focus of the conference, I'll probably roll that in there somewhere.
Well, that's interesting, you know, evolving in the area of spirituality. You know, I guess a lot of people would consider natural selection or, you know, survival of the fittest to be a part of evolution. How does spirituality tie in with that to drive increasing evolution?
Some of the most prominent or most important evolutionary changes within the human body have been, you know, very small in terms of physical differences. For example, speech, language, comes from changes within two very small areas of the brain called Broca's area and Wernicke's area. And just minute changes in the physiology there, and that is part of what enabled language to be formed in the human being. So we don't need to see physical evolutionary changes on a grand scale. We only need to see them on a very minute scale. And as for spirituality, how that would affect evolution or survival of the fittest, I think that when you recognize and acknowledge you're a spiritual being living in a physical body and commit yourself to working in alignment with, say, the universal laws.
We'll be right back with more with Kathy Callahan, Ph.D., on Reflections. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our conversation with Kathy Callahan, Ph.D.
Commit yourself to working in alignment with, say, the universal laws, you can go places in terms of, you know, thought development and take humanity to a whole new level. Imagine if we could eliminate something like warfare. what an impact that would make on humanity's, you know, future evolution. And I think it will be our ability to think as a spiritual being that will help us to overcome so many of those things like prejudice, the prejudices and the biases that have actually held us back from developing into what we can really be.
Wow. So the focus is on the spiritual and the physical is just a part of that.
Yes.
I see. Well, I was wondering, this might be a bit off topic, but I've always wondered with the Tasmanian wolf, its similarity to a regular wolf. It's a completely different organism. It's a marsupial, yet it's evolved in such a parallel fashion that it's difficult for specialists to tell their skulls apart. And of course, one of them's extinct, but it seemed to me that perhaps something spiritual was going on there, like the body was following the form of the spirit, perhaps.
That's interesting. Yeah, you're talking about parallel evolution.
Yes.
Where two animals evolve, although they are different species, they're in different geographic locations. but a similar environment, and they evolve physical features that are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And those physical features are those that help them best adapt to that particular environment. But I don't know. I haven't given any thought to that.
Okay, sorry.
No, you raise an interesting question. You raise an interesting question with that.
Well, I guess we'll move on to your book, Multisensory Human, and that's you wrote that for the ARE Press. What will the listeners learn in the book Multisensory Human?
All right. I've already addressed a little bit of that in terms of our sixth sense being imagination and our seventh sense being intuition, the spiritual sense. But the book basically, I did a lot of research on that book, and it's one I'm extremely proud of because I combine not only information in the Casey readings, but I combine, at the time, the latest findings in anthropology, psychology, and, ethnology. I give a, open the book with the subtitles, Evolution of the Soul. So basically the creation of the human soul. And then the creation of our physical body. And the third chapter is, the creation of the mind. So I talk about the evolution of humanity, of the human species in terms of, soul, body, and mind. I take a look at global affairs in that book and, kind of see where we're at and, have a little bit on the karma of the nations that, Casey talked about in a number of readings. And then I actually go into some of the prophecies in terms of where humanity is heading. And I took a look at, a number of prophecies from different areas around the world, Buddhist and the Hopi and the Mayan, look at Nostradamus, the Marian apparitions, and, of course, the Casey readings. And what they all are seeing is that this generation is converging, coming up on a, some call it the quantum leap, or, it's a focal point where a change of some sort is going to occur. And of course, I think that is a change in, our perception and the way we see the world and because of the development of this seventh sense. So there's a lot in that book. There's history. I tie in, anthropological studies, archaeological studies. I try to correlate them with information in the readings and see where they marry up. I talk about, the evolution of the mind and three levels of the mind, conscious thought, subconscious, and superconscious. Roll in some, psychology. And I actually use a Hawaiian model of the kahuna, which is not the big kahuna, but kahuna is a shamanistic system, of ancient Hawaii. And I use that as a means to, hopefully better describe, this new model of looking at the world, this multisensory perception that we are having so many people on this planet now demonstrate. I also talk about, this not being a, a recent change. I'm an evolutionist, and things take time. And I talk about the mystics across history and the shaman of various native traditions, not only Native Americans, but in Africa and South America and Siberia. A shaman being a person who has a foot in each world, one foot in the physical and one foot in the spiritual. And so, 10,000 years ago, we looked at these people as different, as special in some way because they had the ability to do that. The mystics in the last, since recorded history, who were able to experience God, experience this oneness, we look at them and go, oh my goodness, they had something special. Well, they didn't have something special. They developed this ability, the seventh sense, thousands of years ago, and now, because evolution takes time, I call them the forerunners of change, and now we, as a species around the world, are seeing more and more people being born with this multisensory perception.
Have your own views evolved, since you've been involved with the work?
I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so. When I speak, I always tell people that if you're not learning, you know, if you're not always trying to find something new, you're stagnant. And I know sometimes like in the Navy, for example, when you've been in command and after 3 years you're leaving that command, people often ask you, would you have done anything differently? And I usually say, yeah, there were a couple things I would do differently, because I think we always have to be learning. How have my views changed? I use Casey. I use the Casey readings as my guide stick. And when something new comes out, I kind of compare it to that and I see if it resonates with me. I'm very big on going with what your gut feeling is. And, now, there's some material that I just have dismissed because it didn't feel right to me and it didn't align with the principles in the Casey readings. I think I've broadened my horizons and learned more. And, but I still do come back to those as basically, you know, my voice of sanity, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I understand going with your gut. Well, I learned that in the Army. You know, sometimes you don't know why you need to do something or you make a big decision, then you find out afterwards that made complete sense, but I don't know why. I guess that happens to everyone in their lives with all sorts of things, but that's interesting. Well, I understand that you enjoy traveling as well. Do you have a favorite ARE tour?
Oh my goodness. I started going on ARE tours in 2005. And in fact, in less than two weeks, I go on an ARE cruise to Alaska. But a favorite tour, I would say, I've actually got two, but my first one in 2005, for two reasons. One, it was to Egypt. I mean, dream of a lifetime, you know, something you save your whole life to go and do and to see the marvels of that civilization. I mean, just to stand by the Sphinx and put your hand on it, or go into the Great Pyramid and be able to meditate there for an hour, just to see the wonders that were created so long ago and are still there. So that, you know, is a favorite. But a second piece of that is the people I met there, people who have become friends over the years, people who I continue to travel with. And the only time we see each other are on ARE trips of some kind. But they are friends. They are friends. I went to Greece last year. And again, traveling with many people I've traveled with before, including some who were on that first tour in 2005 with me. And that one was special because it was a celebration. In August of 2010, I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer, and I had a long, hard fight battle, and I went through the months and months of chemo and surgery and 2 months of almost of radiation, and I had just come off and finished the radiation for about a month. When I went to Greece, and I was physically worn. I was exhausted. I didn't have a lot of energy.
We'll be right back with more with Kathy Callahan, PhD, on Reflections. You're listening to Reflections, the wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Dr. Kathy Callahan.
I had lost my hair. I had my little turban on and I was walking with a cane, and, just the acceptance of the people on that trip. And again, there's always new people. There's some, you know, but to help me when I needed it, did I need an arm to steady me on the slippery, you know, rocky slopes that we were climbing around. So that, you know, that one was special as well. I mean, you know, they're all special in some way, but those two, I probably would single those two out.
I was wondering, you mentioned something and I've been thinking about it. Super conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us what is the super conscious?
Okay, when Casey, in the readings he gave on the human mind, he talked about three levels of the human mind. The first being the conscious mind, our daily thoughts, the thoughts we're aware of. Our subconscious mind, which is the seat or the place of our dreams, where our dreams come from. It controls our autonomic functions in the body. It is also where the soul memory resides, a memory of all our experiences, all our lifetimes on this world or in other places. And the soul, according to Casey, is that individualized expression of God. At the moment of creation, when souls were brought into being, each one was an individualized expression of that creative spirit. The soul grows in terms of learning, okay? The superconscious mind is the third level of mind. And this is the one that is connected directly to the universal mind or the creative consciousness, or, you know, there's different names for this. Casey used the universal mind. That is basically, intelligent God mind itself is probably one way I could say it. And we always have that ability to go to that place. It takes an effort, usually through meditation, to reach that level. But when we are there, we are in direct communication with the universal mind, basically with spirit itself. And it is in, for example, I mentioned mystics earlier, it is in those moments when, you know, St. Francis of Assisi or St. Teresa of Avila or some of the other mystics throughout history, you could talk about maybe even Plato as being a mystic, Pythagoras certainly. They had that moment of clarity when they could see everything, and again, see beyond the physical and truly understand the makeup of this world, of the universe around us. So that is the superconscious mind. We all have that. We just need to tap into it and access it.
Well, we're about out of time. Do you have any final thoughts before we go?
Oh, final thoughts. I was interviewed a couple months ago on a local public access TV show about Edgar Casey. And I think he asked the same question. And basically what I like to tell people, because I know there are a lot of skeptics out there, and actually I'm somewhat of a skeptic myself. It takes me quite a while to accept something new. I have to investigate it and research it and that sort of thing. But I tell people to always keep themselves open to possibilities, because there is so much wonder in this world. There are so many things we don't know and we don't understand. And things that we thought were magic hundreds of years ago are commonplace today. But never be so restrictive in your thinking that you just dismiss something outright. Be open to the possibilities that surround you and listen to your inner self. Listen to that little still voice within, because that always directs you in the right way.
Well, thanks again for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose, who has a CD out called Connecting to Your Higher Self. Hello.
Hello.
And what's the Thought for the Day today?
The thought for the day is really, I love this because it's about intuition and it's about connecting with that oneness. It's 792-2. The more and more each is impelled by that which is intuitive or relying upon the soul force within, the greater, the further, the deeper, the broader, the more constructive may be the result. And when Edgar Casey talks about our soul force, which is our subconscious mind, which is the part of us that utilizes all of our senses. When we get in touch with our senses, we get in touch with our intuition. And when you allow that, and this is something that, you know, I feel very blessed to, when I speak at, I'm an ARE field speaker, conference speaker, I teach this, and on my book, Wake Up Your Intuition, I talk about the importance of developing the five senses. It is so important that our soul force, that we connect with that part of ourselves, because as we connect with that, we begin to make decisions, we live our life connected to what is for our highest good, because our soul force is that which connects us to God. It's the higher self, your higher guide.
The soul can see farther than your physical eyes. I guess it's kind of like steering a ship. If you just react right away to whatever you hit, if you hit a rock and you turn, you're going to damage your ship. But if you look ahead, if you can look beyond to what you can feel through the ship or through the immediate reaction, you can turn before you hit that difficulty and you'll end up in a lot better shape. So perhaps, I guess, working on our intuition is trying to develop our soul to where we can tell what's right or wrong a bit earlier on before we go down a path.
That's so important. You're guided. You become in divine guidance, where you're living with that divine guidance.
Well, thanks for doing the thought for the day.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Dr. Kathy Callahan for talking to us. Make sure to check out her book, Multisensory Human, which you can find at the ARE Catalog at arecatalog.com. Also, she's presenting the workshop entitled Universal Laws, God's Handbook for Living Life to the Fullest, on October 20th in Charlottesville, Virginia. And she'll also be at the ARE Annual New Year's Eve Conference, to be held December 29th to the 31st in Virginia Beach. To find out more, go to edgarcasey.org, click on Events, and click on Conferences. Thanks also to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day. And most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce.